Peace, everyone. Hope we are doing well as can be today. If this is your first time tuning in, this is In Defense of Liberation, the show that is working towards and educating about true people's liberation movements and revolution. I am your host, Josh. I'm a trans woman. I use she, her pronouns. And today we are going to be talking about something a little personal, a little close to heart, I should say. And that is the lack of seriousness that I and others have committed to organizing, especially here within what we call the United States. Now, there's three things in this I want to talk about, and the kind of the causes of this, though, you know, there's many different causes, many different histories to talk about. The first is opportunistic or hesitant leadership and the failure there within. The second is the lack of a working class or resistance culture within the population at large, especially today. Not to say that there never was or that it doesn't exist in some parts of the population. And the third is the repression of revolutionary groups and organizations, both in the past and today. So the first point we want to talk about is opportunistic and hesitant leadership. This comes from a couple positions, the first being that the United States is one of the most advanced industrialized nations in the world, even though it has deindustrialized. It has the largest military. It lives off of the wealth that it extracts through different mechanisms around the world, and is able to sustain its rule through the resources and wealth that it consumes from nations of the global south and even also of fellow Western nations in Europe. So, the second place it comes from is really just a lack of experience and a lack of political clarity. Because opportunism, right, is really about individualism. It's about the idea that individual benefits can be gained from the struggles of the masses, or individual gains can be, you know, had from, you know, putting yourself in a leadership role. And there's some gains that can be had. You know, we all know there's union leaders who've been union leaders for 30 years who haven't really done anything, who've made a comfortable living off of this. We know the Democratic Party for sure is guilty of this, of just completely taking the money, the ideas, and the energy of the people who are still beholden to it, and completely manipulating them into ineffective or inactionable causes. And then, you know, opportunism also stems from the capitalist exploitation that is central to the way in which we live life. And so it's taught from birth, this idea that the best way to get yourself ahead is by stepping on others, right? And the hesitation really comes also from the level of comfortability, right? That this industrialization, this advancement, this consumerism has created. Because now, more often than not, people who are coming into the movement, especially joining above-ground organizations or forming above-ground organizations, are coming from a point of maybe moral calling, maybe a religious kind of calling, and if not that, maybe, you know, they were politicized somehow through some experiences, maybe 2016 with Bernie, maybe 2020 with Trump, or I should say 2016 with Bernie and Trump, 2020 with Trump and Biden. just kind of the issues that came up, and then, you know, of course, a lot of the disillusion that a lot of people are feeling today from just the lack of any options ahead of them. It does lead to a kind of state of wanting to hold on to what little things we have, right? State of mind where it's not so much survival. We're all surviving. We're not at the pinnacle of death like many people around the world, though there are huge populations that are at that level. Those aren't the groups that tend to be, say, leading three-letter organizations like the DSA or the PSL. Those tend to be people who, you know, are politically motivated, but not necessarily because of the extreme conditions that they live in. Anyways, this level of hesitancy also comes from the fact that the U.S. really doesn't have, like most other countries of the world, this culture of resistance that I wanted to talk about. And, you know, this is true and untrue at the same time. There is certain kinds of cultures of resistance among the different segments of the population, you know, especially, of course, the indigenous population, the African population, the immigrant population from many other nations around the world. But the pan-European or white population doesn't have the same kind of revolutionary experience that other populations do. And the reason why that's important today also is because what little revolutionary culture does exist now is very easily extinguishable because it's often isolated, and it's often even targeted by other left groups when it falls out of line or when it takes a stand on something that, you know, this group or that group disagrees with because of this example or that theoretical, you know, text, what have you. And we would rather, you know, keep pure the idea of socialism or liberation or revolution in our minds than actually take the steps towards building a revolution, building a revolutionary culture, building socialism, because also the third reason, which is the mass repression and violence that most every population within the United States has experienced, even the white working class. Though, of course, not to the same varying levels. The populations of oppressed people in the United States consistently face violence every single day. They consistently have to develop, you know, networks of survival, consistently have to develop even, you know, some liberal, non-revolutionary groups, but nonetheless, you know, fraternal organizations, community groups, church groups, because by necessity, if they do not, of course, what little, character of resistance is allowed to build up, again, will be even more further isolated. So, all this to say, right now, there's a type of organizing that is happening, especially here locally where I am, that sets its objectives and its goals short so as to not have to deal seriously with these questions and not have to look itself, you know, squarely in the eye and critique the amount of fear, of hesitancy, the lack of spirit, and the real crux of this, you know, episode's message, the lack of seriousness in a lot of cases. Because no matter how much your rhetoric slaps, no matter how much your fucking Instagram posts slap, no matter how many books you can put out, no matter how many webinars you can have, if you don't have mass support, if people aren't there, if folks aren't listening, and if folks aren't engaging, especially, like really getting active, really getting encouraged, really getting involved, coming up with their own ideas, putting up, you know, new committees, new councils, new fronts, new objectives, new organizations, and really getting into the groove of things, then you know something's wrong here. Because if groups can put out 20 plus books, if they can have a webinar a month, if they can hold weekly meetings, if they can get agendas together, if they can do all of this stuff, but yet they can't get one or a half dozen people to come and join them, it might be because rhetoric is not enough. Meetings are not enough. You know, talking is not enough. We need action. We need real examples of something different. We need real examples of socialism, of revolutionary culture, of experimentation with social relations and social structures, which is called revolution, but which we get to decide what it looks like, and we ultimately are the actors in our own history. So we need not base any of our ideas on past or, you know, maybe present groups that we disagree with. Our objective should not be to try to create and cultivate the most perfect space. Our objective should not be to try to proselytize or be a prophet to people about socialism. Our objective should be to get with people, to listen to them, to hear their problems, to enunciate answers to their questions clearly and concisely, in a way that avoids the pitfalls of things like liberalism, of things like, you know, just believing that, you know, our ideals can line up to the fucked up neo-fascist world we live in. And really asking folks what they're willing to do or what they need support with doing in order to try to actually make a material change wherever they are, however they can, to whatever extent they have the ability to do so. Those networks, that support, those connections, that compassion, that listening, that concern for people's problems, that relationship building, that is where real seriousness is built. Because if you're actually talking with people right now, whether you're in the United States or anywhere in the world, you realize that shit is extremely fucked. And the only way that we are going to be able to get out of this war, because that's what we're at war, folks need to recognize that, is by putting an end to the systems of oppression that allow us to continue to be stagnant and exploited within positions of oppression. That is how we have to organize, that's how we need to move, that's how we need to speak to people, and that is the level and depth of relationship building that we need to go to be able to get people to care about any of the shit that we're saying. Or maybe take seriously the idea of socialism, because now it's not just some weirdo coming and preaching to them with a pamphlet, but it's their very good friend who's taken the time to listen to them and actually show an example that they want to support them, they want to help them, and they want to be, you know, someone different in their lives, now is talking to them about socialism. That's a completely different story. And when it comes to this idea of taking socialism seriously, right, I think that also goes for folks among the left who call themselves socialist, communist, anarchist, right, but who cannot concretely deal with the situation in front of them, who do not study, who do not build relationships with people, who do not join their unions or try to form any, who do not join any local organizations or try to form any, but are perfectly content debating, arguing, and persistently attacking people who are supposed to be their fellow folks on the left, either on the internet or even in person. Because I will say for myself, although it's not always a frontal attack, or a direct insult, the best way to recognize whether or not you're being respected and your ideas are actually being valued is to look for patronizing things like, yes, that's a good idea, and then no follow through on it. Or, you know, just like a question of, you know, I wonder what that would look like. Or maybe just taking a somewhat concretized idea and abstracting it and asking a bunch of vague questions. Like, I don't know whether to talk about it because I don't think any of the comrades even listen to my podcast anyways, but, you know, like maybe an example of 10 minutes being spent in a meeting on the question of what tenant council means, and going into a, like a definitive question about the characteristic differences between this and an association or a union. And it's just like, you know, folks, it seems, have all the time in the world to waste when it comes to other people's time. But when it comes to their own time, they have no time to commit to meetings. They have no time to commit to events. They have no time to commit to planning. They have no time to commit to the actual long-term, long-haul actions that go into building a strong organization, building a conscious practice of organization, of militancy, of relationship building, and instead focus on obscure questions, you know, maintaining a rigid meeting schedule, having political education sessions that don't apply to the concrete conditions ahead of them, and, you know, really just, like, spending a lot of time twiddling our fucking thumbs. And I'm really sick and fucking tired of it. Like, here's the part where I'm gonna get angry. Because, here's the thing. If we talk about fucking revolution, if we talk about making material changes, we have to understand that it's been 300 to 500 years of colonial and imperial oppression, whereby reforms and revisions to the capitalist and imperialist system have almost always, if not in every instance, simply led to a stronger state, a stronger capitalist class, and a stronger dependency on this class by the oppressed people. Now, that's not necessarily always generalizable. There's instances where, you know, certain situations maybe had conditions bettered to a varying degree. But the difference maker is that the same people are still in power. The same people are still making incredible wealth off of the back of the working people. The same people are still oppressing and occupying the global south. The same people are still paying and getting paid by the Israeli state to either train police or train the IDF. You know, it's no power shift has happened. No fundamental change has happened. The essence, the character, the quality, the actual content has not changed. The face might look different. We might have a different president, different House of Representatives, some people that call themselves socialists, right? But a real socialist acts like a socialist wherever they are. And that means advocating for the rights of the working and oppressed people. That means struggling for liberation by any means necessary. That means fighting without exhaustion and without quitting in whatever avenues and mechanisms and pathways present themselves, while also creating new pathways and new organizations for ourselves to actually struggle within and struggle with in order to actually build a culture, a history, and a movement of struggle. Because before you can have a revolution, you have to have serious movements. You have to actually have a history whereby people commonly get involved in these different efforts to make change. And that is just simply not the character of the working and oppressed people here in the United States in general, for two reasons. One, apathy, depression, and exploitation. And the second, political and police repression. But these things have always been true. they've always been true in cases where revolution has happened and failed, and in cases where revolution has happened and succeeded. The levels of oppression have only intensified and concentrated, but they've not changed in quality or content. In the majority, they've only added new forms, new tactics, and new players into the mix so as to be able to further oppress people, say, with their own, leadership, right? Like the, what's that group? That Black Caucus group that's always working with the Democratic Party. I can't think of their name right now. But, you know, another instance might be someone like, you know, an Obama figure, right? Or, you know, others who within the union movement might be picked because they're women, or because they're Latino, or because they're a steel worker, right? And then they're used and paid off, essentially, to A, you know, convince that there's some form of representation, convince people that there's some form of political power that's shifting, or some kind of vague notion of change. And the second reason, it seems, is because as things are falling down, as Rome is dying, it looks like the imperialists want to prop up Black folks, Latino folks, prop up women, trans folks, gay folks, into small positions of power where they can't really make much of a difference, so that people are mad at them and not at the people who did the shit that led us to this point. That's another tactic that seems to be at play. But the seriousness of the movement and the seriousness of organizing is in question for me, because, you know, I see a lot of groups out here doing good work on social media, going out, talking to people. I see a lot of folks doing the digging, doing the long-term relationship building, doing the real militant organizing, right? And yet at the same time, I see so many who will find any excuse to critique these groups, or so many who will find a reason or an excuse to not participate. Because here's the thing, it's way easier to just have these ideas and call yourself a socialist, maybe post on it on social media, than it is to actually get in the movement and face the consequences, the difficulties, and the contradictions that come with trying to organize. It's a fucking pain in the ass sometimes. I'm literally in the thick of it right now. But, you know, at the same time, it's necessary, because if we don't start organizing here and now, where we are with the contradictions, the difficulties, the personality differences, the political differences, where we can, how we can, building the unity that we can, struggling for a stronger unity, and actually building a culture, again, of people coming together, of collectives coming together, making decisions, talking about their problems, talking about socialism, talking about revolution, talking about real material change, real examples of something different. This is more possible now than ever, and yet so many people are hesitating, so many people are afraid, so many people are unwilling to take the steps that are necessary, and I would like to put myself on the chopping block here to say I am just about as guilty. I would say, actually, not to give myself any credit here, because it's undeserving. I'm just as guilty and just as honestly critiquing myself here as anybody else, because for the last 2 years I've been participating in this bullshit and doing this bullshit, knowing full and well that I wasn't, you know, really doing much anything but twiddling my thumbs here. And yet, all the time, what did I do? I critiqued. I needed to build. I needed to grow. I needed to, you know, organize and struggle. And so that's what we're here to do. That's what In Defense of Liberation is about. That's what I'm going to be doing in the future. And that's what y'all need to be doing. Y'all need to be getting up with people in your neighborhood, on your block, in your schools, at your jobs, talking to them about serious issues they're facing and trying to figure out together ways to answer these questions. It's not always going to be easy. Most of the time, you're going to have a lot of differences between yourselves, whether personality, political, what have you, maybe religious differences. But we have to understand that it is the majority of people, the masses, who are really the actors of revolution. And although a lot of people feel, you know, questionable about whether or not the U.S. working class is capable of revolution, I have seen in the African population, the indigenous population, the Asian population, the Latino population, and many others like the trans community, the gay community, LGBTQ plus community, and especially among also women, there's a sincere militancy and dedication to struggle that cannot be allowed to die out, cannot be allowed to be extinguished by fascism, and cannot be allowed to be harried or, you know, held back or caught up on obstacles by supposed socialists, supposed organizers, and supposed revolutionaries who are too scared to even step out of their house and go talk to people, but yet expect others to do it for them. So remember, folks, let's keep it real, let's keep it serious, and let's keep struggling. All power to the people.